feet. I love tea. I love the Java Jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A cup, boy. I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot, now pour me a shot.
I'm your host, Nicole Slavin, and today's sponsor is Hearst Ranch. I'd like to thank Nat Wiener and Jack Inslee, our engineer and producer. We're broadcasting from Roberta's out in Williamsburg. Fabulous pizza. And I'm here today with Javaphile Gaylene Quinn for our inaugural episode. It's fitting that I'm talking with Gaylene since Gaylene's held my hand for the beginning of what I'd call the all things coffee portion of my food and beverage career. So thanks, Gaylene.
Well, thank you for having me. And I have to say that it was really fascinating to see your approach to coffee, you know, having you come from this, you know, a very unique background of food and wine that that you've also been able to share with me. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So each week on the Caffeine Stream, I'm going to be joined by a variety of guests or be on location with a combination of growers and roasters and brewers, coffee industry innovators. I chose to speak with you today because I felt that we should start as close to the source as possible. And with Gaylene, you know, short of being a grower, you've seen the trade from literally the source to the cup. Your work in coffee has taken you halfway across the world and back, from Colombia to Italy to London, and now New York, I have that right?
New York, a very interesting one, I have to say.
Yeah, and I know you're a native of Bogota.
Yes, Bogota,
and
Colombia.
At the start of your career, you worked with one of the larger coffee companies in the world there.
Well, you know, it was funny because coming from Colombia, you would think that you would actually start working, or many people in the coffee industry would start working with someone on the growing side. Instead, my experience started with Illy, an Italian coffee in Colombia. So that was a little bit peculiar, I have to say. And you know, it was really a challenge because at the beginning, people didn't understand what the value added of an Italian coffee was in Colombia. You know, we have amazing coffee, we have really good quality, so why would we actually start using this coffee? Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that I started to do was to communicate and make people understand the difference between a good green coffee and a good roasted coffee, and also the difference between a good coffee and a bad one. You know, it's actually interesting to see how in Colombia we never knew anything about traditional ways of preparing coffee, like the Turkish coffee and my favorite, the Italian coffee maker, the Mocha.
Yeah, you had how did you brew coffee when you were growing up in Colombia?
Yeah, well, we didn't, basically. It was really...
Your family will not be hearing this.
Oh, my God, I hope so.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, we had... Actually, my mom used to make a really good coffee. She made it with panela, you know, the raw sugar that we have in Colombia.
Yes.
And a regular percolator. But, you know, if you talk to anybody in Colombia about how we drink coffee in the offices with what we call the Greca, it's just embarrassing. So I hope nobody is listening to me, but I have to say it's true. It's actually true. Anyway, that was one way. The other way to make coffee was with café de olla.
Right.
It's basically a pot, and you put some coffee in the boiling water, and then you wait until it sits, and then you have it. But that's
you strain it off.
You strain it off. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
So it was quite interesting to be in Colombia, working for Illy, helping them build their brand in Colombia. We decided to open a chain of coffee shops, so that people would understand the difference in the taste. Mm-hmm. And it was actually quite successful. So that's the way I started to learn
now,
about
which
coffee.
Which was the chain of coffee shops that you decided?
The Illy coffee shops. It wasn't the Espresamente Illy in Colombia. Yeah,
okay.
That was before the Espresamente Illy project
right,
started.
Right.
all over the world.
I hate to ask this question because I have a feeling that I know the answer, but were you roasting the coffee for Ely in Colombia?
No,
it was being green beans shipped to Italy, roasted in Trieste.
Yeah, roasted in Trieste, the old-fashioned way. What we did in Colombia is that we produced some of the coffee that Ely was buying, mm-hmm. and they had this Ely Prize Award, this Ely Award that was able to help coffee growers maintain the highest quality beans.
Right. So then after that, where did you move on to from setting
up
those stores?
So since we started these stores and they were quite successful, the Colombian Federation of Coffee Growers appointed me and the company that I was working for to develop these Tiendas Juan Valdez. I don't know if you've ever heard about
57th Street here in New York City.
Here in New York City, yeah.
There's a few now.
There's a few now. They opened a few in the U.S., mm-hmm. but most of them, and the place where the Tiendas, the project, has been very successful, it's been in Colombia. They have a couple of hundreds. So they're doing quite well.
Yeah. I have to say, we are going to brew some coffee later on in the show, and I did want to surprise you with a bag of Juan Valdez coffee, but now that people are going to hear about your experience, you've probably grown a little bit away from, and your tastes have probably changed quite a bit.
Well, it was a very interesting experience, I have to say, because in Colombia, we have every kind of coffee that you can imagine. And people always think, okay, you know, it's coffee from Colombia, so it's just this type of coffee specifically. And it's not true. You find, you know, coffee...
If you say that you have mild Arabica, there's tons of different varieties.
There are tons of varieties, tons of flavors. And the geography of Colombia is quite complex. Right. So you have places where coffee is grown that are just by the sea, some others that are in the mountains. Mm-hmm. When you come to Colombia next month with me,
we hope.
I'm going to show you.
We're going to make this happen, and then you'll be listening to the Caffeine Stream broadcast.
Exactly.
So we can do one
from the mountains of Colombia, actually.
Perfect. The Cordilleras.
The Cordilleras,
yes.
Brava.
So I actually, this spring, I was lucky enough to get to attend an event that was hosted by Intelligentsia Coffee. It was here in New York at the Housing Works down in Soho. And one of their direct trade coffee farmers, Camilo Merizalde, he came to speak about his farm, Finca Santuario. And
in Cauca, right?
In Cauca,
right.
Yes, Cauca. So... it's mostly bourbon, mm-hmm. Arabica, and he, you know, he started, I think it was in about 2001, he had this great ambition to open, to grow a farm, and he consulted with tons of engineers and roasters and farmers around the world, sort of created this mini nation of experts for himself, and started from barren pasture land, really, and created this farm in about 2 years' time it took them, I think, to start up. So he came and, you know, shared the story with us, and the result is just this incredible, you know, sort of a complete perfect marriage between what can happen when you have the perfect, you know, the environmental advantage of being in Colombia and also this sort of sense of architectural harmony in the land.
I have to say that what's very interesting about this guy is that he didn't really grow as a coffee maker.
Yeah.
He for some reason decided to go into that business, which is something that you don't really
I know,
see.
Why?
Right. Yeah.
People would say,
this is where I grew up.
Right. Growing beans in Colombia. And, you know, I think, you know, part of, he actually, he had come to the United States and studied at Purdue University and then went back to Colombia with this dream. And I know, I think you and I, even though it's out of season now, tasted the coffee at the Specialty Coffee Association show in Atlanta. I remember, I think you were surprised by the taste, if that's right.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll continue talking a little bit more with Gaylene Quinn.
Great.
Now I've got myself lost.
Welcome back. You've tuned in to the Caffeine Stream on the Heritage Radio Network. You can listen to our archives at heritageradionetwork.com. And if anyone feels like calling in today, you could call in to 718-497-2128. So we left off, we were talking a bit about Camilo Merezalde, and we had tasted his coffee from Finca Santuario, that Intelligentsia coffee roasts. And we had tried it from the Ava Solo. I knew that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. For both of us, it was actually the first time we'd seen it. And so, Gaylene, getting back to your experience, I want to get now to the Italy portion, where you saw tons of different brewing methods. And, that, you know, I think so it was the Café de Oya.
Yeah.
You left that far behind, and you went to Italy at first for your MBA, I think it was, right?
Yeah, I was really excited about learning more about ingredients and products, and of course, you know, Italy is one of my favorite countries, producers, and it was really, really exciting. I got to study in not only business, but also the food aspect of the world, of the country.
Yeah. Yeah, and were you at this point, I mean, were you an espresso drinker? Is this...
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, I started with Italy, so yeah, I was definitely addicted to Italy.
So no more coffee, you started going to Italian cafes during school, after school.
Well, you know, we always had the break, you know, la pausa del caffè in the school, and it was great to see how attached all these Italians were, although it was a very international environment, all these Italians were super attached to the coffee pausa, the break. And at the beginning, I didn't really understand it because, you know, it's we're going to have a break, a coffee, you know, just let's go and let's get some caffeine in our blood so that we can continue to study and that's it. But then I realized that it was really a part of the culture and they were... It was like the happy moment of the day for them. And it was a moment where actually they got very creative. They could talk about all the ideas that they had in their minds. It was actually a productive time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you wouldn't think of.
Great nation. I mean, I picture it, you know, when you're in school, of course, to be surrounded by artists and literary types and all those brainy exchanges that go on.
Yeah. It was sort of like that. But then I really got to know more about Italian coffee when I finished school and I started to work with Manuel Terzi,
right,
which you are very familiar
with. Yes. So, I you know, we both eventually, I mean, of course, I much later and much more briefly worked for and with Manuel Terzi here in New York. But I wanted to hear about the start with that and how you met him. Was his cafe already open?
Yeah, definitely. He has a really beautiful coffee shop. I don't know if I would call it a coffee shop because it's so extreme coffee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I visited Bologna this past May. I was in Italy from middle of May to middle of June and actually went to Bologna in the beginning, spent a lot of time with Manuel, and then went back at the end so that I could spend more time with him in the cafe.
And have some coffee, come on.
Yes, plenty. I think, you know, he usually has 5 single origins, mm-hmm, at the cafe and then has 2 blends. And each time I went in, I would do a tasting through all of them.
Yeah, me too. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The great thing is that he uses all these different, and that's actually, he was the one who introduced me to all these different kinds of coffees from different parts of the world. And the great thing that I learned was how to get the best out of each coffee by preparing espresso.
He actually, I know he taught you initially how to use the mocha, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is how you brew it home. And
yeah, that's the only way that you can have a decent cup of coffee at home. I know that you might not agree with me, but
well, we can fight over this a little bit later in the show. I'm sensitive to it. Let's say that I'm sensitive to that belief. So Manuel, though, I know was one of Ernesto Ely's proteges.
Yeah.
So sort of interesting, and I wonder how you see his development as sort of an espresso master. You know, what happened for him and how he created the gem of a shop that he has there.
Well, you know, he was really keen into learning about espresso making. So that's how he started to study with Ernesto Illy, which, as we all know, it's the creator, I would say, of espresso. And while he was working with him, and he learned a lot about from him, he was looking for a good coffee to make for his shop, mm-hmm. to start mm-hmm. his own coffee shop. So he was looking in Italy, which, as you can imagine, they have pretty good coffees in general, and he didn't find it.
Yeah, well, and I think for Manuel, and what I got from his shop is, you know, you can have so much espresso all over Italy, and a lot of the enjoyment I think that we have as visitors to the country, and what's sort of surprising about that culture, is it's the atmosphere, and not always is the coffee, the espresso prepared so expertly. And you go to a cafe like Teresi Cafe in Bologna, and you have one barista on the Faema E61 machine dedicated, and three other people executing everything that happens in a shop that's, I'd say, all of 400 square feet,
yeah, it's,
500
it's
square
tiny,
feet.
But it's full of people all the time.
Non-stop,
it's crowded.
All day. So there is a lot of magic in that experience for me.
Yeah, so, you know, the great thing about Manuel's shop is that it combines what you were saying, the culture that you see it all over Italy with good and bad espressos, and the perfection of many different coffees prepared in espresso way.
So when you were in Italy, you started working with this company, and then that took you to London?
And then we went to London to explore the coffee culture in London.
Yeah.
And then we came to New York, which actually it was very, very interesting, because there were so many things happening in New York related to coffee and good quality coffee that it was exciting to be here. Yeah. Well, in London, I would say that the progress is not
they're still a nation of tea drinkers.
I think there are not many
give their beer a very fair shake.
Yeah, beer definitely. Yeah. So. But it was not nearly as developed as New York.
Now, have you taken the Pausa del Cafe with you back to New York? Do you have that tradition?
No, what is that?
Your coffee break.
Ah, la pausa. Yeah, my coffee break, yeah.
My accent, you didn't even
Yeah, what is that? Ah, la pausa.
La pausa.
Right.
La pausa.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I try to, although I prefer not to have any coffee if I don't have a good one close by.
Yeah.
I think I need that.
You know, it's funny, one of the customs I picked up while I was in Italy was the passeggiata. And nice. This, for me, was the most magnificent idea, that you should just stroll somewhat aimlessly with a friend or even on your own at the same time, sort of every day.
You don't have that here in the U.S.?
I'm trying to create it in the Carnegie Hill section of Manhattan. But here, it's, I think most people, they go from A to B. They go from point A to point B, whereas the point A to B to C to D for me in Italy was that you walk to the cappuccino or the espresso, and well, actually only the espresso at that hour of the day, usually in the afternoon.
Yeah,
you walk
forget
to the
it. Right, cappuccino, walk, that's embarrassing.
Not past 11, they
not
say,
past,
right?
I would say 10 even.
Yeah, so you walk to the espresso, and then you walk to the park, and then you walk to your wine, and then you walk to your home and to dinner.
Well, so, you know, that's pretty feasible here in New York.
Yeah, I'm trying
to
make
I'm sure
this happen.
You're going to be successful.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we
and
come
we're gonna
back,
prepare some coffee.
Yes, we're going to get back to some brewing methods, and we can talk about your love of the mocha.
All right, sure.
Yes, thank you.
Call it fanatical, but I am not trying to make this a spectacle. But I have this craving, justifies behavior. I really need some of that. Ooh, good coffee, strong coffee. I need to have some. Ooh, good coffee. Strong coffee. cappuccino, a double espresso. I need something with a really big kick. You ask me about cream, you ask me about sugar. I tell you those things make me sick. In my room, good coffee, strong coffee.
Welcome back to the Caffeine Stream here on the Heritage Radio Network. We are talking today with Gaylene Quinn, and we're now going to get to some of our favorite brewing methods here. So Gaylene, in honor of your native Colombia, I went and got whatever coffee I could get yesterday. That was...
From Colombia?
Yeah, from Colombia. And I'm sort of hoping that this is a good coffee. I went to Orin's Daily Roast. More of the people that I prefer to buy coffee from grow and roast seasonally only. So yeah, you're not going to find their coffees this time of year. We talked about Finca Santuario a little bit earlier, and I'm definitely going to have you come back when that coffee is available later this year, so that we can taste it together.
And we're going to taste it in Colombia, so...
Yes. Okay. So, at Orin's yesterday, I was actually, you know, this was really sort of a delightful experience. This is a coffee shop that I know they have many all over New York, and this one in particular on 79th and Lexington is fairly close to where I grew up, and they've got soup to nuts and coffee and equipment there. Also a lot of tea equipment, although I sort of pass quickly by tea, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I haven't yet trained my palate to adjust to being as refined as it should. So I went to Orin's, and you know, I was really pleased when I went to ask for the coffee. The gentleman behind the counter, I said, you know, it says that it's from a micro lot in Colombia. Do you know where it's from? And he said, you know, I am not sure, but let me check. And mm-hmm. he went to the back and he was looking through his book and he said, you know, I'm not sure. It doesn't list it here, but I know that it's from the part of the country that recently was released from government control. So I thought, you know, whatever the story is behind this, I'm glad that this person is trying to communicate it to me.
Yeah. So, although it sounds very weird.
Yes. So I know I did walk out with some Brazil coffee from the Distillery.
Well, the Colombia has a really great aroma.
And we've cured our new burr grinder here in the studio. And so I'm going to boil up some water. And while we're waiting for this to boil, I have the opportunity, Gaylene, to get to talk about my favorite newer brewing method, which is brewing in a Chemex. I, you know, coming from a retail perspective, I feel that the French press leaves me with less control and a lot of dirt behind.
Yeah.
And I,
messy.
You know, I've enjoyed working more with the Chemex. Just for those listeners out there who aren't familiar with this, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Chemex pot. They're sort of these very scientific looking glass beakers, and today I have in front of me what I dubbed the hippie version, which has this sort of wooden middle part with a leather strap around it.
That's pretty.
I wasn't able to get a small version. They come in different sizes. This one is for 1 to 3 cups. They make larger ones, which are for more, I think, 10 cups, and even one that brews up to 18 cups, I want to say. It was, I love this. It was, to me, this is sort of the most classic and cleanest brewing method. It's, it does take a little longer to make. The filters are thicker than the standard drip coffee filters, so you have a longer saturation period.
You get the same result as with a regular percolator.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to test this out now. You know, basically, I mean, this was invented by a chemist, and you get the longest, most direct contact with the water for me. Well, I guess short of one of those Yama brew pots. And here in front of me, I'll have to work in sort of an online demo of this. Another thing that I love about the Chemex is you get sort of these origami style coffee
it
filters.
Looks very artistic.
Yeah, for the smaller version. So I don't know how well we can describe this to you, but it's basically a semicircle with another smaller semicircle attached to it at the bottom. And the small Chemex comes with these or you buy these filters separately, and you have to fold them together yourself. So the sort of crafter in me loves this.
It's a pretty process.
So I'm going to pass this off to you, Gaylene, and let you fit it into the filter, and you can put that into the Chemex, and we will moisten that up. The Chemex, just to give you a little bit of the history of it, I'm going to try and sell Gaylene on this at the same time, explaining this to a few of our audience members. But the Chemex was invented or released by the Chemex Corporation. I don't know how long they had it under wraps, but in 1942. And I think what I always find so interesting is that, just like you're saying, you know, the percolator, at that point, 2/3 of all households in the United States were making
like
beautiful. Yes, right. You have a round cone there. Excellent. Okay. So Gaylene, just so we can all visualize this, has just put the filter into the top of the Chemex, and she's going to moisten it with a little bit of water. Boiling and then cooled water just over the top of the filter right there. And we've already ground some of the coffee ahead. I think we might need to add a little bit more. The Chemex, the company suggests that you use a rounded tablespoon of regular grind coffee per 5-ounce cup. I know that as coffee experts or mavens, whatever we want to call ourselves, that
we should be
weighing our coffee just as very solid bakers weigh their ingredients, but we are cheating a bit today. We have a table here filled with electrical equipment and some coffee equipment and water right now. So,
well, you know, these kind of situations, that's
minimize,
why you have a Chemex,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, we would be using a mocha.
Right. Otherwise, we would be using the mocha. So let's while we're waiting for this to brew, do you want to just put some of the... We'll grind up a little bit more coffee there.
I need some more.
Excellent. All right, so we're grinding a little bit more coffee in our burr grinder. And... So while Gaylene, you get started brewing that coffee, I'm going to let Gaylene talk about her favorite brewing method while we wait for the Chemex to drip through. Because I know you and your husband, you know, you being from one of the largest exporting countries of coffee in the world, married an Italian that did not yet have a love for coffee.
Yeah, you know, that's actually why I love the mocha so much, and Manuel, of course. He wouldn't ever have a cup of espresso, which I thought it was very strange. I think it's the only Italian that I ever met that would not have espresso. We would go to a coffee shop and he would have an Americano. Can you imagine? People were yelling at him.
They were like, hiding behind
oh
the other
crowd. What is this?
You're hiding behind the other customers.
Yeah, it was a little bit embarrassing. So the only way that he actually drinks coffee is if I make it on the mocha. And with Manuel's instructions, which are very precise.
Yes.
I have to say, I'm not going to explain everything because, you know, if maybe some of the people that are listening to us, that maybe they're not familiar with the mocha to start with. So I think that you have to be used to use the mocha so that you really get to the details.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never seen anyone make the mocha with the top off or open while it's brewing, but I've heard from both you and Manuel, it has to be.
Oh my God, it makes a huge difference.
Yes, well, and my thought, as well as other persons that I've shared this with, is that right? Have said the coffee is going to go all over the place. And when I said that to Manuel, he said, if the coffee goes all over the place, it is not clean coffee or not fresh coffee, or your mocha is not clean.
Yeah, the mocha is not clean, or the coffee's old. So that's also a good way of understanding what is it that you're going to drink.
Right.
No?
So we skipped through the actual blooming process. I had wet the grinds that were in our Chemex filter a little bit so that they could bloom and
do we
saturate.
Have the right quantity of coffee, do you think?
We do. We do. We're gonna have
because with all these aromas, I really
here.
Feel like having
yeah.
one.
Yeah. So this is good. We're gonna get to enjoy this today, and then I think off showtime, we're gonna be brewing in a new baby little Bodum French press that I bought, which I love this one. It's tiny. It has sort of that seltzer, old-fashioned seltzer bottle caging, that wire mesh around it. And we had seen this for the first time again at the show in Atlanta last April. Mm-hmm. And I fell into the trap that it was on great sale yesterday, also at Oren's. So, going back to what I was saying, I mean, now we're watching this coffee drip through into the Chemex here, and it's perfectly clean. And the retailer in me knows that I'm going to take this filter out. I've already been able to wait on other guests, and I throw this in the garbage. Whereas, not to knock the French press, and I do love the company that makes the French press. They make most of them, and they make our lovely kettle here, this kettle.
They do an amazing job.
They do an incredible job. But for me, if I'm not at home in the shop, the French press just leaves me with a lack of control over the coffee being saturated. So that's... Here we are. We're going to get to drink our beautiful Colombian microlot coffee. And then I want to thank you, Gaylene, for being here with me today. I promise I'm going to invite you back when we taste the Finca Santuario in a few months. And I want to also thank...
We're going to be on the air from Armenia.
Oh, yes, right. I also want to thank the staff at Roberta's here, and I want to thank so much Nat Wiener and Jack Inslee and the Heritage Radio Network. And this has been the Caffeine Stream. You can tune into heritageradionetwork.com and listen to our archives. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive, and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java.